Hello and welcome to the Shropshire Witches podcast. I'm Amy.
And I'm Alex.
So today we are tackling, well, we're tackling quite a big topic and we're going to look at the supernatural, which pretty on brand for us. But rather than looking at your conventional ghost stories or your conventional witches, we're going to instead turn to hoaxes and all that kind of nice stories along those kind of lines. So, when is a ghost not a ghost? When does a community sometimes allow itself to get the better of themselves and get a little bit carried away? So, we're going to explore all these kind of stories. You would expect witches, ghosts, paranormal hoaxes, and some really interesting stuff from Shropshire and elsewhere.
Yeah, I love it. I'm very excited. And I've got to say that this is very much kind of your area, I mean, which I love because this is when I'm kind of taking information home with me and I'm really excited about it. But I think I've got a couple of like shorter kind of snippet stories that I have seen that I find very funny. But I think, yeah, this idea of discussing like the hysteria around ghosts and when something becomes a ghost and, what is the kind of whether the haunting's important or not in terms of its actual existence or whether it's just the story. I don't know. I love it. I think let's go for it. Let's kick
I
off.
think what's exciting as well is that with these stories, and as you'll see as you listen, sometimes it's not clear cut. Sometimes it's very clear cut and it's someone being a little bit of a toe rag and making stories up. But other times, particularly with the last case that I'm going to share, is that there's so many twists and turns in it, is that does it actually matter at this point whether there is genuine paranormal activity or whether how the community feels about that activity is the important bit. So it's exciting. So I think I'd like to start with my first introduction to kind of a hoax or a kind of false alarm. I like the idea of referring to them as ghost false alarms. Like you can hear it going off in the kind of like the fire bell at school.
Like, bloody ghost alarm's going off
Yeah.
again. It's all right, guys. It's fake.
On
It's
the blink, it's on the blink. We need to get that
fine.
fixed. A story from around about the 1800s, late 1800s, and it's from Ludlow Castle.
Okay, yep.
So, Ludlow Castle, amazing building with such a rich history, and it has several reported hauntings. So, you've got the most famous case being the lady Marion, who was betrayed by her love, who during the time, the anarchy between Stephen and Matilda. And her love was actually using her to try and get into the castle so they could attack the castle. And her ghost is said to haunt them, the building still. You can hear her shrieks and her cries. There's said to be ghost soldiers and other ghostly goings on. So, naturally, when people started to hear shrieks and loud noises coming from the building at night, they naturally turned their mind to a ghost. They naturally thought this must be a ghost. So, there was quite a bit of a whirlwind going on in the community, and the people of Ludlow actually were quite terrified. So after a few nights, some of the more big, burly, brave men decided
Obviously.
to go to Ludlow Castle and search for this ghost, or if it wasn't a ghost, search for the rotter who was scaring everyone. And they found something, but it turns out they didn't find a ghost, nor they didn't find, a kind of pantomime villain with a curled mustache and making. It was an owl. And what I think is so cool about this story is that the ability for that community to whip itself up into a kind of almost hysteria, the noise of the owl would have been relatively familiar to people within areas like Ludlow. But because it was coming from the building that was said to be haunted, it was coming from the place where the ghosts are. Naturally, their mind began to run onto more superstitious things and that this must be the ghost. And I think we could look at this in two ways, and it's with so much of kind of folklore and the paranormal is we could see it as a symptom of silliness, or this kind of thing that Charlotte Byrne would refer to people as being, which we won't, share.
She was very judgy. She knew a
Yes.
lot, but she was
Yeah.
judgy.
Sorry, Charlotte. Love you to bits. But yeah.
You, but you can be critical.
But instead, I think it gives us a really unique, and so many of these stories actually do give us a really unique insight into the psychology and to group mentality, and also to how pertinent the fear of these things, the fear of the supernatural and the fear of the unknown actually is. So as hilarious as it is that there was an owl that made the whole community think that there was a ghost, it's a really powerful thing to kind of look at and unpick a little bit. And I think that was the first time I'd heard of a ghost false alarm. And I think it's inspired me to dig deeper and to find a few more of these stories, and consider what we can learn from them. And I think we can learn things from them. And I think there's an idea that we can learn from all of them about humanity and human fears, as I've said, but equally each story, as you'll see as we work through them, actually tells us something very different about the community it belongs to. So I just think they're brilliant.
I love it. And I think it's funny, isn't it? Because you could find an argument that some, you know, if kind of in the uncanny sense, the team skeptic, you could argue that, of course, all ghost stories are in fact ghost kind of hoaxes, or ghost, you know, like the kind of the fire drill kind of ghost thing is, you know, if you didn't believe in them. But I think it's, whether people believe in them or not, it's fascinating to me, the human inclination to think something is supernatural. I know you and I are great ones for this. Like, if something happens, or like there's a knock or something, I'm like,
it's the devil.
Oh God, yeah, that's it. We're like, the ghost of the Victorian child has been angered, and
not
you're like,
them
no,
again.
I think, not again. No, I think the cat jumped off your desk upstairs. You're like, oh good God, yeah, that's fine. No, don't worry, it's just Misha. But you know, and I think there are some parts of like kind of maybe growing up in rural communities and things where you're surrounded by stories like, you know, the devil's chair and legends and things, and so your imagination is already sort of rife, whether you realize it or not. But I think wherever people are, in towns or, yeah, it's funny, I think our kind of proclivity for a ghost story, even if we believe it or not, we're always on kind of tenterhooks to hear a ghost story. People love it, and people love to kind of then judge a ghost story, pick it apart, or
yeah,
you know, rate what they find terrifying. So some people find like jump scares terrifying, other people find, you know, whatever the scenarios may be. But same as everyone kind of doing that, I'm sure you said this in an earlier episode, like the Bloody Mary, you know, in the mirror,
they're gonna
throttle you, even though there's absolutely no history of her throttling anyone, I don't think, but it's still fascinating. So yeah, and I think the idea that this actually happened, and that it was an owl, or an owl and her babies, is fantastic. And I just think it's that idea of fear and humor being like bedfellows constantly.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you kind of have to have that sort of brevity in a way. It's fantastic. I'm obsessed. And Ludlow, not only is it one of the prettiest towns in the country, but also the fact that it's got a ghost story, which actually just turned out to be a bunch of owls, I think is kind of very, very Ludlow as well. It's like, if that happened anywhere, I go, probably Ludlow.
Yeah, I like to think as well that to suspend disbelief for a moment,
yeah,
there are ghosts. We are going to imagine, and this is a thought experiment, listeners, that there are ghosts. I'd love to imagine the actual ghosts of Ludlow, Marion, and you know, all the other nameless, sadly, spirits,
mm-hmm,
watching these group of men stumbling around in the dark, trying to find a ghost, only to find an owl. I just think it's one of those situations that I just think hilarious just to think about. And it's probably more of an insight into my mind than anything else.
Such a good plan. Like,
yeah.
This idea of kind of, if you went kind of delving further, warming to the theme, you know, so if Marion, for example, went through what she went through in betrayal and all this kind of stuff, we're like, we hear you.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of, to whatever ends, like, you know, screams and all these things that she's finally tuned over the years to kind of be heard and seen. And she's going to be like, I'm sorry, are you effing joking? Like, everything she was like in life to kind of have really got her act together as a ghost to kind of do this. And they're like, and some owls have caused more of a stir
than I ever have.
And she's like, oh, isn't that the patriarchy? Like, I don't know if it's any of it. I think it's just some blokes that are like, oh my God, let's go and find out what's going on. It's just some owls, mate. Let them be. Like,
yeah, leave them be.
They're protected now. I'm sure they were fine then as well, but it's the idea of this kind of mob gathering and these owls.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Oh, that's a terrible owl voice, but I don't know what
that was. A great owl voice. I think you should do that for the rest of the episode.
Yeah. What story is next? I think it's fine, Alex. You don't sound like an owl. But
no.
yeah, these ghosts, the soldiers, people be murdered, attacked, things like that. And the owls are like, hold my pint, babe. I'm just going to do a couple of little hoot hoot. And everyone's
People will be
in arms.
terrified.
Ghosts are real. Owls are real.
It's interesting though with Ludlow, because Ludlow with so I spend a lot of time looking at ghost stories in Shropshire and things, because you know why not?
Do, yeah.
But so you have some hauntings that are very sporadic. So you'll have some that are reported in kind of like the early 1800s, and then you don't hear of them again till the late 1800s, early 1900s, and then they just kind of stop being reported. You
Yeah.
have some that are kind of like isolated incidents. Ludlow seems to consistently have reports of the paranormal. It seems to have consistent reports of things being a bit strange there. So like in the 1940s, there was a family of people who
Owls.
were from, yeah.
Good story. Childish. Yeah.
There was
Sorry.
gonna be one of those episodes, isn't
Yeah, it is. Just like
it?
hooting, like, girls, you're gonna have to get your shit together.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, please continue.
No, it's fine. So there was a family from Liverpool who were they were evacuated to, I know they said evaporated, then they weren't. They were evacuated
Much more
to Ludlow
serious. Yeah.
Castle. And they only actually stayed about 2 weeks because of the ceaseless kind of banging and noise and shouts and unease they felt in the castle. So you've got, even in relatively modern times, and there's
Yeah.
been accounts since then, but that's a very notable one, is that these people had come from a community where they'd probably never even heard of Ludlow. I mean, you know, to Ludlow Castle to be out there during wartime, and there's bigger things going on, but in the newspapers it's been reported that Ludlow Castle is haunted. So you've got this thing in the mind where there's this building that enacts its own folklore in a way. And I think we've mentioned this with places like workhouses and prisons. They become an embodiment of their own folklore. And it doesn't matter whether that actually has happened or whether there is such a thing as the paranormal. That symbol of the medieval castle or the, you know, prison or the monolithic kind of workhouse, even just seeing it brings to mind certain images, certain ideas. And I think that's how a lot of people's minds can get themselves in these situations. It's the same as when you're camping of a night time and you hear something rustling in the bushes, and it's your mind is, you know, it's quite obvious it's going to be a fox or a small animal, but you go, oh no, it's a serial killer, they're going to come and murder me,
Yeah.
because you are used to seeing films where people who are out camping get murdered, you know. So I think the building becomes a symbol of itself, the atmosphere becomes a symbol of itself, and that's how a lot of these hoaxes actually take hold. Because the end of the day, with some of these cases, if they didn't take hold, it would have been reported as, oh, some silly billy put on a ghost sheet and run around going woo, and everyone laughed, you know. It
Adult
wouldn't
journalism, yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't be reported, or if it did, it'd be to poke fun at the person. But
Yeah.
we see in a lot of these cases a very sustained reporting, and almost in some of them as well, a very sustained reporting of this actually being true, this actually happening.
Yeah.
And then, oh, it hasn't, it was a hoax, and that switch from it. So we're able to witness these cases almost unfold in real time and see the shifting change in belief. And even afterwards, some of them still find it hard to believe that it's been made up or that it's not the case. So I think it's fascinating. And I think when we look at ghost stories, it's like what you mentioned a little bit ago, is that all ghosts have the potential to be a hoax. All ghosts have the potential to be something that someone's made up or that don't exist, because we don't have, in a lot of ways, concrete proof for any of
Yeah.
it. But the fact that these stories tantalize and endure, and that they actually excite us, you're able to suspend your disbelief to a certain extent until you're proven otherwise. And I think that's how sometimes these take hold. And I just think when we look at stories of ghosts, it's interesting to also look at the near misses or the non-ghosts and that kind of thing.
No, it's extraordinary, isn't it? And I think it's, I mean, ghosts have, arguably, ghosts have an unrivaled charisma. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Whether real
yeah.
or not, they're like, they've got it. So, people are fascinated by them, from, you know, the ghost of a coughing Victorian child to, you know, a murdered lover, whatever it may be. And so much so, you know, like you said, it was interesting in wartime, you know, everything that's going on. You could have had, you know, the summer of 1942 and Stalingrad or something, and then all of the papers, and then Trump just like, Ludlow Castle's haunted.
Newsflash.
And they're like, look over here. Ludlow
yeah.
Castle's haunted. And you're like, okay, well, priorities. But there's going to be people, you know, whether... kind of distraction or not, but it's fascinating that people, whatever's going on in the world, our fixation on something like that is the minutiae. Like, the, you know, we love it. We absolutely love it. And I think it's, you know, what also is always interesting to me is the journalism and things behind ghost stories, that the journalists, of course, you know, will try and make something spooky, enhance it, or be laughing at someone as though they're in on the hoax, as though they knew the whole time, you know, like when they're reporting on it, they're like, oh, you know, X, Y, and Z thought these owls or whatever, you know. And I think when we tell stories, I think there are two types of way of doing that as well. There's also people who are kind of, will tell a ghost story slightly tongue in cheek, being like, look, I didn't really believe in this kind of thing, but here goes. And then there's others that are sort of just really kind of go hook, line, and sinker, and they're fully into it. And I think there are people that do it to such a degree that they're like, you know, like you go to prisons and things, and they're like, oh, the ghost of a hanged man disappeared through the floor in front of our eyes. And you're like, well, I'm sorry to swear, but I fucking doubt it. And I feel like if that did happen, they're coping very well with seeing somebody dead. And a ghost of a hanged man disappears. You know, you mean, like, come on. I do think some things are beggar's belief, but I don't think that we care, because if you're in the right place in the right circumstance, a ghost story is fantastic. And sometimes those places can even be like a cafe on a Sunday morning. It doesn't matter if the weather's right, whatever it may be. But Ludlow Castle embodies the exact gothic, you know, it's a medieval town. It's a beautiful medieval town. By night, it's lit up. You know, it's got everything you want for that textbook sort of Robert Hardy-esque ghost to something more dramatic, like the Bronte sisters, if you want something a bit more gothic. It's got something for everybody. You could have a jolly ghost Shakespearean style, or you could have something much more sinister. And I think Ludlow embodies that in just abundance. Haunted or not, doesn't matter, because it's such a kind of perfect place for a ghost, that hoax or not, it's not important, is it? People are going to be, you know, they're going to be invested in it, even if they don't believe in it.
Yeah, it's what these stories do to the imagination and what these sites do to the imagination. It's you see that castle, and you say you'd never been to Ludlow before, you'd never heard of the place. You see that castle, you're going to imagine there's something still there.
Oh yeah.
And then when you find out there is reports of it, that's just part of the parcel. But it's, they're very evocative, these buildings and these places. And I think on a, I think ghosts are never just ghosts. I think there's always something more to them.
Yeah.
I think there's always something that they are a conduit for, or they are a answer to, or that they are a convenient explanation, or even just something that a community can exercise from themselves. And I think even with these stories, there's a reason why someone has decided to do it or to say that this happened. And sadly, sometimes they are just to be silly and to, you know, try and pull the wool over other people's eyes and make other people feel silly. But equally, sometimes it's not as clear cut, and it's not easy to look back through time and go, well, that's why they did this, or that's why they did that. So I think they're just fascinating, and I'm almost as interested in these near misses and these not quite ghosts as I am the actual ghosts.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because I'm as well, because I think ghosts are your kind of posthumous everyman, aren't they? They're sort of like, you know, you relate to the heartbreak or the brutality of you know, love or cruelty or whatever it may be. So Marion, you know, Ludlow Castle, you kind of think, yes, I relate to, well, I mean, I can't relate to her because I wasn't betrayed and threw myself from a tower, but, you know, but I mean, there are sort of remnants of her story that you're like, oh, a wronged woman. And of course, then you get all the titivating stuff like, I bet she was young, bet she was gorgeous, bet she was rich, bet she was this. You know, we start to sexualize these stories in a way that we do, as we've discussed, with witchcraft and things like that. And everybody does it. And, you know, I remember being in Ludlow Castle, which I've been many times, and my sister was with me, but I think the, like a few of us had gone, and I was like, God, I said, it smells so authentic, doesn't it? Like, that is wonderful. Like, what's that smell? And my sister was like, actually, I think that's piss. And I was in one of the towers. I thought, I think someone has had a piss in here. Yeah. Which arguably is authentically medieval, but it was just because it was so atmospheric. And I was like, why does that smell like that? And I thought it's going to be one of the only times I've walked into a room, smelt piss, and thought it was like, you know, I think, I don't know, what is that? Like burnt lavender or something? Like, no, I think someone's probably.
Had a little wee wee.
Yeah, they've done a wee wee. Maybe they need the prostate checking because it does smells quite undiluted, actually. But like, yeah, so it's interesting the surrounding lends itself to instantly being charmed by fear of ghosts. It's exciting. So, have you got another story for us?
Yes, I have. So this one isn't a ghost, but I
Okay.
think it fits into the same idea that we're looking at, and it's
Okay.
actually a witch hoax.
Yeah.
So this idea that somebody can pull a bit of a prank and it can be taken far too seriously. And it's set in a village called Horton, which is near Wem.
Okay.
And this is from the account was written in 1818, but it was from 50 years before. So it's in ye olde speak.
Yep.
But it's said that Horton hadn't really been a community. It's again the sort of criticism you see of rural communities or you working class communities, that it was behind the times and it was very superstitious and everyone was a bit ignorant. They use the word ignorant a lot to
Yeah.
describe people in these kind of communities. So it's not my words, it's kind of taken from the actual account, but it was said that there was a servant boy who lived in the community, and his name was Thomas, and he was kind of a bit mischievous, kind of liked a bit of a practical joke. But he decided one day that he was going to hide his master's plough, and then he made out that it was taken away by witchcraft. And there was quite a prominent witch that was said to have existed at some point in Horton. So the community was kind of quite used to the idea of witch stories and witchcraft. And as we've discussed in previous episodes, witchcraft held such a prevalence in daily life that it was hard to discern what was and wasn't witchcraft. So people began to believe that that actually could have been possible. And they held some credence to his actual story. And they searched high and low for the plough, couldn't find it anywhere. The success of his little white lie, his little hoax, actually encouraged him to take it a step further. And it is referred to in the sources as taking a step further, which encouraged him to set the house on fire.
Okay.
So there's taking a step further, you know, oh, I've hidden the plough, I'm going to commit arson. It feels
Yeah,
like it's a
but
bit
it's burning a
more
house
of a
down.
step further. But
Understatement.
luckily the house didn't exactly burned down. There was just a small fire, so it's okay. And he after he'd done that, he hid the parson's saddle, because which apparently was seen as worse than burning down a house. So the parson had come to check on the family because their house had had a fire,
Yeah.
and the boy, when the parson was in the house, hid the saddle and again said it was the Witch of Horton. It was the Witch of Horton. And the parson decided that wasn't going to be the case because he'd honestly paid for it. And there's an idea that if a witch, if an item has been bought with honest money and honest work, it can't be enchanted by witchcraft or it can't be taken by witchcraft.
Yeah.
So then he started to be quite suspicious of the boy, and he made them do a diligent search. So not just a regular search, but a diligent one. And they found the hidden saddle and the hidden plough in the hayloft. Which, you know, he must have been quite strong to get a plough up into the hayloft.
Also, did no one think to look there?
Exactly. That's maybe it's because they
That's
weren't being diligent.
not top drawer hiding, is it? Like that,
No.
you're on the scent. Like that is,
Yeah.
if I was going to put them anywhere, I'd be like, do you know where I'm looking first? The hayloft. They're not
Yeah.
in a priest hole somewhere. Like, how
Yeah, it's
old
like,
are they? I mean, Jesus wept.
let's go and have a look at that there.
Not in a hayloft, are they? Yes, they are, yeah.
So they found it, and obviously he got into quite a lot of trouble. And he was dragged, and I said dragon, he was dragged to the justice, the local justice, and put in front of the clergy of Wem and the justice, I believe at Sutton Hall.
Oh, okay, Seton Hall. Cool. Yeah.
I don't know where Sultan Hall is. Apologies, Sutton Hall. And he rather snivellingly gave out a full confession and said that he had, been playing all these practical jokes, and he'd been doing this, and he'd been hoaxing, and that actually he'd been doing this for a lot longer than the community had actually realised. So there was lots of little things he'd been doing, and then blaming either on witchcraft or this quasi folkloric witch of Horton. And he was sentenced to some time in the House of Correction, and he received one whipping as punishment. Though, I mean, other than him being whipped, I imagine he didn't play any practical jokes after that. And it's interesting, this story, because not only is it playing on, it's showing a young person playing practical jokes and being, essentially a young person. There's no maliciousness at first. Obviously, burning down a house is quite malicious. I wouldn't recommend it. But it's him realizing he can take these allowances and take, and he takes it too far. But also, you've got quite a interesting comment on the belief of the potential of witchcraft, I think, there, because he is able to do these kind of things because there is a belief in witchcraft in the community. So had that belief not happened, had there not been a given that witchcraft could happen and that people could change things, make things disappear, or had power over objects and things, he probably wouldn't have been as successful as he had. He was able to blame the fire on the witch. He was able to blame the things he'd stolen and hidden on the witch. And it's only through the parson's knowledge of witchcraft and knowing that little folkloric snippet about anything bought with honest living, honest money, can't be affected by enchantment, that his whole world, his whole life crumbles down. So, though it's not a ghost hoax, I think it's an interesting hoax because it's an interesting comment on belief in witchcraft in that kind of early 1800s, 1700s, late 1700s world. And it gives us an insight into that community. It gives us an insight into beliefs in that community, and also a comment on how prevalent belief in witchcraft is. And as we know through other episodes, which then belief in witchcraft echoed all the way through to the turn of the kind of 1900s into the early 1900s. So, though not a ghost, I think it's a worthy story to link in with these because it shows that this person had started off harmless. He'd started off playing childish kind of pranks, and then that whole thing had bubbled over and he'd got very carried away with himself.
Yeah, it's people's sorry, we're both coughing it. It's people's sort of rapid accepting of the supernatural and witchcraft and things, which look, I'm going to argue we still do, because people still get their tarot cards done and things like that, and people still get superstitious if you don't buy heather and things like that, the races and these things. And people say things like that, and then they're like, oh, and a week later I ripped my car off, and you're like, well, probably because you drove like an ass. But like, we will, because we seek patterns, we will make these things interlink and find a way. And I think you're absolutely right in saying, had that belief not been there, people would quickly have poo-pooed it as total nonsense. And throughout history, there are people that would be like, this is nonsense, there's no way. But as a mass, we still, even now, I mean, maybe not as much, but we're still pretty quick, even in a secular society, to be like, ghosts. We love it. We still do it. We still do it. I find it really interesting. I've got, I mean, one of them is like the Cottingley fairies. That was 1917, and Elsie and Frances, these two little girls, and it's so famous. And Cottingley near Bradford. And they were in their garden, and they had these fairies, which now we look at as in a modern time with modernity, and go, well, they're very, albeit very good, drawings. I think wasn't even Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was kind of getting a bit of a that's the wrong sentence. I was going to say that's not in association with what they're saying. It wasn't like that. I didn't mean in a like sexually
He
excited
was
about.
very excited by them,
Yeah,
wasn't he?
you're
He
gonna
was
say
very
sentence and go,
enthused.
he was gonna get hard. And it's like, no, now you're throwing in a different can of worms. You go, no, let me just add, no, caveat, that isn't what I meant. I meant it more as in like he was so excited by the supernatural.
Yeah.
So just, oh God. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, the people got very kind of het up about this. And actually what I thought was so interesting, it took until the 1980s for the cousins, the girls, to admit that it was a hoax. And what's fascinating is Elsie Wright had done the drawings, which, I mean, for a young girl, like
Yeah,
they're
they're very
good,
good.
actually. I was like, oh, I love them. I'd love to know what happened to them. The drawings. But they'd pinned them into the ground with hat pins. Love this. And they still claim before they died that one of the photos was real.
It's amazing, isn't it?
And look, obviously it wasn't. But is it to keep the hoax alive? Is it to keep, I don't know. But does it matter? Because it's such a charming story, and it's two girls.
Yeah.
A bit like the, was it the, if ever I say the Fox twins, I think of this country, and they're like, have you ever seen that with the Fox? That is Fox twins. Badger opening the tent with his thumbs. That's niche. If people don't listen to this, watch this country. If you don't, what have you been doing? It's amazing. But it's, they were Fox sisters, weren't they, from America? And they
Yeah.
hoaxed the ghost, and then it was actually an apple bobbing on the floor or something, and one could click her toes or something.
Yeah.
But everybody kind of went with it, and those guys went huge. And it's so interesting. The Cottingley Fairies is still massive. But one story, whether it's a hoax or not, and look, anybody who follows our social media will have heard me talk about this one, and I know you know it, Amy, but it's one of my favourites. It's a Bristolian story, and it happened in 1834. And four men tried to dispute a tenancy of the house that they were living in. They'd signed because their rooms were haunted. And I love this. So we can discuss briefly in a moment. But one of the men claims he saw the ghosts of two women, one of whom was wearing mourning clothes. Another of the men, his daughter, claimed that she saw the ghost of a woman with light hair and grey eyes. And I'm not sure why that's relevant, but maybe they're just thinking detail adds substance. But she wore a cap with lace strings, sorry. And she felt a draft of air as the ghostly woman passed her bed. The window was open. And as well as these visions, all four tenants complained of a strange blue light appearing in their rooms. So we can discuss that as well. But what is interesting is the fact that the JP, the magistrate, was sort of saying, no, like there's no such thing as ghosts. And the men would refuse to believe it. And in fact, it was said one of them cited the late Reverend John Wesley, the Methodist founder chap, as he likes to be known, I'm sure, was an authority on the reality of ghosts, apparently. But the law could do nothing. And so I don't know what happened to their tenancy. I don't know if they stayed there. I'm assuming they did, whether they came up with another story, like some owls are there making a right din. But they'd be like, feed them, keep the owls happy.
They could be your
And
friends.
yes, I'd love to be friends with that. I don't know how, whether they're a bit like robins. When people always do this, they go, oh, there's a robin in the garden, it's my dead granny. You're like, no, there's a robin in the garden, because they're really territorial. If there's another robin, it'll kick the shit out of it. I was like, it's not your granny, unless your granny was like that, in which, fair enough.
Fair enough, yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. But I love this idea of these four men being like, but it is real. And
Yeah, I'm seeing it.
I'm seeing it. The one had a cap on and her hair was light. And this magistrate being like, ghosts aren't real. I can't have a
It's great, isn't it?
tenancy. If ever you're in a tenancy and you're like, my landlord's shit. Yeah, it was haunted. It's haunted as fuck.
Yeah.
Okay, I need out. Saw a woman with light hair and blue eyes and she had a cap on. How do you know her hair's light? She's wearing a cap. Unless it was
Yeah,
hanging down, I suppose. But
might be, yeah.
I don't know. You wonder how much detail they went into this. But, I suppose that other idea of bringing his daughter into it, there's always this kind of idea of women being able to see, like especially young women,
Yeah.
ghosts and the portent of that and this kind of thing. I don't know. My cynical nature always kicks in as well. I think it likely they wanted out, and fair enough, it might have
Yeah.
been in a really shit situation. But I think sort of kudos there for being pretty industrial, because as excuses go, that is a good one.
It is, isn't it?
But do they believe? We'll never know, will we? But there's fantastic stories. You can look on the British newspaper archives, and it's everywhere on there. It's fantastic. But what do
That's
you think?
See, that's one of the things I find so interesting about these stories is did they actually believe it? So did they actually believe what they were seeing? Had they actually had those experiences? or was it complete and utter nonsense?
Yeah.
Because to suspend judgment for a moment,
Mm.
if they were having genuine paranormal experiences, and I'm a skeptical believer, I do believe that people have experiences. Do I know what those experiences are? No.
I think I'm in the same camp, 100%. Yeah.
So it's one of those where if they were having those kind of experiences, it must have been so traumatizing that they had to actually, share them. But then they're fully, because even in the past, we think of the past as being more accepting of ghosts and things as we are now. But if in anything, I think it's actually the flip of it. I think you'd be less likely to be laughed out of court. Maybe not court, but you'd be less likely to be laughed out saying that your house was haunted now than you would have 100 years ago. So, I think it's so interesting to consider what those people must have believed, and we'll never know because they're
Yeah.
gone. So unless they come back up and tell us,
Love
the
the irony of
ghost,
that. That would be great. And they're
but
still stuck in that tenancy because they're haunted now.
but I think for me, it's so interesting. I think it's possible they could have been experiencing something. It's also incredibly possible that they could have been absolutely making stuff up, and rather than going on about dodgy neighbors or, bad pipes or there's mold, they were like, let's go a bit avant-garde with it. There's ghosts.
Yeah, let's dial it out.
But I think those kind of cases are more interesting, or more, there's more to unpack than your clear-cut hoaxes. So like the Witch of Horton, that was a clear-cut hoax. That was a little boy being, look at me, I'm going to see how far I can push it, I'm going to burn down a house.
Yeah, I
But
mean,
these
bloody hell.
ones, it's like, even when the community says, no, that's a hoax, that's not true, or there's reasons why that couldn't be true, how do we know? Because how can we or people deny what a person is experiencing? So, and you do find with a lot, some of kind of like poltergeist cases, where you might have the person claims to have experienced things and have experienced kind of poltergeist activity, but then as soon as they stop being believed, they start to embellish it a little bit. They start to add things, or they start to then, almost because the world is thinking it's a hoax, add things that make it a hoax. So is it something like that? And it poses so many questions that it's exciting, and most people want answers to questions. I enjoy just thinking about all the possible outcomes, but
Yeah.
it could have quite easily been, we'll say we're haunted, they'll definitely move us out if there's ghosts. But I don't know. I think part of me wants to believe, part of me really does want to believe in the blue light and the grey-eyed lady.
Oh yeah, I love it, and I'd love to believe it. I think I'm inclined to think that maybe they thought it was an option and it escalated. They thought, shit, throw in the blue light. Like we got to really add some substance to this. And maybe they'd kind of heard other ghost stories that kind of they were like, right, throw this in and, as well, and whatever it may be. Also, yes, they risked ridicule, and I agree with that. That historically, you probably might have looked like a complete prat. Talking about this, but I think also you would have got the attention of the salacious press in the 19th century would have been, donning their hard-ons over this one. So, like, there could have been a bit of a, there's a bit of money in it as well. Like, not a lot, but I'm sure they could have sold their story and got a bit of, you don't know what's been reported on or whatever. So you don't know also if there's a little bit of kind of getting seen a bit, and if there was something that they were unhappy with this with the landlord, they could have kind of got a story into the paper. And I just think it's an interesting way of playing it. Do I think they genuinely had supernatural experiences? I don't know. I think it's a bit of a hoax. I think it's more of a, yeah, but hey, doesn't matter if it's true or not, it's a great story, it's
It's
funny.
interesting as well
Yeah.
because I can think of quite a few stories in Shropshire where there's been a haunted house, and it's the way the newspapers report it is that there's this haunted house, all of this apparition and these things happen quite quickly, all of
Yeah.
a sudden, and the family are asking either flee or they're asking house us somewhere else. And now you've said that, it's interesting to consider those ones and think, were they hoaxes? Were they doing it just to try and be moved out of their housing? Because there's one, I think it was as late as 1952, in kind of more my neck of the woods. And it had a brilliant headline. I found it in the newspaper archives called "Old Soldiers Never Die." And it was a family that was being terrorized by their recently deceased father and grandfather in Madeley, so where I'm from. There's a housing newish kind of, what I'm saying newish, you've got to remember, listeners, me and Alex are 173, so
At
it's
least.
newish for us,
Yeah.
but
It's recent.
yeah, the years are a bit vague for us, but they're in the last like 70 years, these houses. And
Very current.
their father was a, I think he was a sergeant major in the army, and he'd moved to Wrekin View when he'd retired. He got really ill, and he told his family quite firmly that when he was gone, he needed to be buried in a Catholic cemetery, and that if he didn't, he would come back to haunt them. And for some reason, his family never took it seriously. Never, they didn't bury him in a Catholic cemetery. And then all of a sudden, the house was supposed to be incredibly haunted by William. So he was making candles disappear. There was loud bangs and crashes, and he made items disappear in front of witnesses' eyes. And that became too much for the family. And they fled. And his wife and his granddaughters, they described the incident to the media, and they said, you know, like, we're not stepping foot in that house. You need to find us a new council house. Because, you know, there was even things like, I think he was able to make like 50 candles disappear and stuff like that. And they got the local priest to try and do an exorcism type thing. But all that did was make him angrier, supposedly. And the newspaper, it kind of cuts quite abruptly. And when I was searching it originally, you can't really seem to find anything post the seance that happened. But it's interesting because I've always took that as just, you know, that's an account of a paranormal activity. That's, you know, whether or not I believe in ghosts, somebody experienced that. But had that been to do with inadequate housing, had they been trying to, you know, leave that house? And it's thinking about the Bristol story now, it's very interesting to kind of consider that how many stories that are taken for ghost stories could actually be hoaxes.
Yeah, I think, and there's a lot to be gained by it in terms of modern time, tourism, things like this, notoriety. I think the second somewhere fits the bill for a ghost story or has a story pegged to it, or maybe somebody famous lived there and things like, like when people were like, oh, it's the ghost of course it's Henry VIII. You're like, because he just doesn't do enough in life. He's now back with his codpiece and whatever else, doing things and appearing on security cameras and things like that. It's always going to be the same thing, isn't it? That you can. It's never the ghost of, like, I don't know, a cat, for example, because surely that's my other thing as well, is like those that can come back, why are they always, either historical, why are they always something kind of like, something almost kind of like, not sexual stuff, but like something glamorous about them. Do you know what I mean? Why is it not like, when someone go, why isn't it like the ghost of like green grass or something, like walking across the, I mean, actually that's probably quite a romantic image and he wasn't real, but like it's never like, oh, there's Dave with his wheelbarrow. It's always like, I don't know, like the ghost of the Victorian child is getting paid by the word in this episode, but it's never just like the ghost of a little fat terrier sitting on a step. It's,
No,
yeah,
there is a ghost of a cat that's sent to haunt Mardle in
oh, okay,
Shrewsbury.
oh, that's quite cool. But did the cat do something, exciting in life? It wasn't just a tabby or something that just did.
It was just a black cat that said to walk up and down Mardle and walk through the walls of different shops.
Black cat, the slant on that though as well, because of course it's a black cat, but yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be. But I like the idea of it having like an exciting backstory, like it was an opera singer or something.
Because that's what we need, isn't it? Because they're
We
like,
do
everyone's
opera
like, oh,
singing cats.
there's a ghost of, everyone needs that. But if you've got the ghost of like a woman, she's always got to be wearing grey, wearing white. Like, it's not the lady, wearing, I don't know, whatever taupe. But you know, it's interesting, isn't it? That the kind of and we love 19th century ghosts as well. The Victorians were big on it, weren't they? So
Yeah.
love the idea of like haunted streets, haunted alleyways, all these things. A woman that was murdered, and there's a ghost, you know, that's heard to scream. And I mean, these ghosts are busy. They're not just like ghosts, kind of putting out the bottles of milk as they did in the 40s or something. They're always doing something exciting. And I think that's not because maybe the reality of what the ghost is. I think that's because that's what we need, isn't
Yeah.
it? I think, like with all ghost stories, it's what we need from it. So even things like, and I think we'll go into her story on another episode because I think she's so interesting, but Sarah Duckett of Hazler Road, or
Yes.
Hazler Road, however you want to say. I always say Hazler, but which is a Church Stretton ghost story and is very famous about a woman that sort of in all but, well, no, not even in all but name. She actually did just sort of disappear. No one really knows what happened. There's lots of different stories, but we know that a farmer was said to be, and again, it varies in terms of when he saw her, but some say he was on his way back from the pub, and you're like, always a strong start to a ghost story. He was on his way back from the pub, walking down a country lane, he saw her ghost by a copper hole, and you're like, okay. But some people say, oh, you know, he saw it twice, and others, and you start thinking, oh God. And I think it's going into that idea of as you were saying, where the embellishments start to happen because they're required in a way, because if people aren't believed, or if people are believed and it becomes a thing, then you can add what you want. Case in point, the oh, what's that famous heist in America? Oh my God, my mind's completely
Amityville.
Amityville, thank you. With those guys, you know, and there's a fascinating documentary. I think it's on iPlayer, and they were talking about that, and it's a hoax, isn't it, basically? But they were claiming, you know, all these things that happened to them, and you know, it just goes to show what people are willing to go along with. And actually, people that know something's a hoax, but they're like, there's money to be made, keep going.
Yeah. And I think it is interesting. I think Sarah will definitely do another on a previous
Like, do
previous
a
episode,
proper episode
a
about her. Like,
future
there's so
episode. We
much to go.
won't do it in the past.
Yeah, we'll do. Yeah, it's not a previous episode. I
No.
think we can really give her like a good amount, because I think it's just such, whether you're from Shropshire or not, I think it's a very cool story. So
Yes, it
I
is.
think she
Yeah.
could be her own kind of contained episode that we can discuss, because I think that would be great. So what else have you got for us, Amy?
So there's the story that I want to talk about the most is the Emma Davis case.
Okay.
So Emma Davis is referred to in the newspapers quite frequently for a two kind of 2 to 3 week period during the 1880s, 1883. And hers is fascinating because when I first started researching it, I was like, yeah, it's a hoax. It's a hoax. But then the more twists and turns I've seen in the story, I'm the verdict's out, shall we say.
Yeah.
So let's start by introducing who she was and a little bit about her that we know from the newspaper account. So Emma was born in the 1870s in a village called Weston Lullingfields, which is near Wem.
Okay.
And we don't really know much about her early life because she wasn't of any prominence at that she wasn't being reported in the newspapers. But everything starts kicking off with her around 13, and she becomes the subject of quite a lot of what we would now call paranormal activity
Yeah.
that is very, very similar to a modern poltergeist. So, for example, her story has a lot of elements that kind of link or make her similar to the Battersea Poltergeist and those kind of more modern poltergeist stories of this being this young girl, 12, 13, early teens, having this explosion of paranormal activity happening around her. She was described as a plain-looking girl, childish in appearance. You'd hope she was childish being a child.
Brutal, but thank you. Yeah.
Basically, it starts with her being in service in another village. So she's in Ellesmere in a farm called The Woods. And she's in service there, she's working there for some time, and all of this activity starts to explode around her. She is said to Whenever she's in the house, in that, and the family who have her in service are called the Hampsons. And whenever she's in the building, coal flies from the fire. There's an absolutely terrifying moment where the coal flies from the fire, it hits the cradle the baby's in and sets fire to the cradle. And the baby sadly received a burn on the face and on kind of the arm. The baby did was fine afterwards, but it was harmed by this coal springing out. And there's discussion at the time, was this coal kind of default? Did it? There was even some discussions that said, did it have gunpowder in it? And they rather funnily kind of poke fun at Cannock because the coal's from Cannock, not from Shropshire. And they say, oh, it's Cannock coal, it's not good coal like we have over here. But not only that, you have just things seem to fly around whenever she's around, buckets fly. You have at one point a boot flew off her foot. Another boot flies across the room and hits the clock, and the clock hits across the room. So really kind of archetypal paranormal, almost poltergeist activity that is happening. And so much so that the community is scared. They don't know what's happening. She is described as being scared as well, which I think is rather sad. And the Hampsons decide that they can't have her on the farm anymore. Particularly after what happened with the baby, they can't have her around, so they dismiss her from service. They send her back home to Western Lowland Fields, and everything goes quiet at the woods in Ellesmere. But interestingly, the phenomena continues when she goes home. So we have several. I mean, this during the 1883, it was all over the newspapers. It was everywhere. And you see her be it would be reported as far as like Hull and Sheffield and Edinburgh, and it was everywhere. But it all seems to point to paranormal activity. Quite a lot of people refer to like the Sarah Duckett case as well, and say, well, you know, Shropshire has precedence for these kind of weird things going on. But when she does go home, it seems to escalate even more. So you've got a situation where she's pegging washing on the line, and all the household linen that she's pegged flies off. It all seems very violent as well. She walks in the family house, and the Bible flies off the table, and it narrowly escapes the flames. It lands on the hearth and not the fire, luckily, which would have been terrifying to a Victorian mind, particularly because her family were Methodists. They were quite practicing Methodists. So to have had that symbol of their religion fly off the table into the fire must have been really tangible for them, of the kind of forces that were at play. And she went out to place more clothes, and that they all go flying off. One of the things that's quite scary as well is she's in the kitchen, and all the kitchen knives fly off the kind of table at one point, and they actually injure a woman's arm. So we have lots of references to this really explosive phenomena happening. And at one point, the police go round the night after, a really particularly brutal night of kind of this activity. And there were six panes of glass broken in the room, and outside the house there was it's described as the greatest disorder prevailing, because there was broken bricks, crockery, there was glass and stones that couldn't be accounted for. Another time, a woman was walking down the road, and she was about 150 yards away from the house, and a quite a large sizable stone hit her coming, and Emma was stood in the door. And to suspend the hoax element for a moment, you've got this girl who is relatively young, having all this really strange things happening around her, and also all the unwanted attention that comes from it. It must have been really quite terrifying. And there's a day where she is really going through it. There's things are breaking. All this stuff going on, and it's reported in the newspaper that she went to fetch her father, but in because she was so scared of what was happening. But she was so ill afterwards, she fell down in the road, and a neighbor brought her back to the house, and the doctor was called. It got to the stage where she was so weak from what was going on around her, we're told in the newspaper, that she actually was put in the care of the doctor. And the doctor referred to her as being in a very nervous and very excitable mood. So she was fluctuating between these flights of fancy and being quite excitable and then being quite nervous and scared. And for about a 2 week period, these two instances, the Woods and Western Lulham Fields, that are all centered around Emma, are being reported as paranormal activity. And there is few records that I've found, and I've looked at this quite extensively, of anyone really questioning it and going, this could be something else, this could be that. The community and the newspapers believed it to be paranormal. I think certainly the community believed it more genuinely. I think the newspapers probably liked the sensationalist element to it.
Yeah, of course.
But at the centre of it is a very vulnerable young girl. And rather tragically, when I was researching it, I found reference to Emma in separate from the trial. And it was said that she in the same year, in the June and July of that year, she had been assaulted.
I
a
was
young
going to
man
ask you about this.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah, okay, yeah.
And she'd been assaulted by a young man, and it'd gone to trial, and the young man had denied everything, as they so often do, but the had been found guilty. So he had been fined for it. And I think there was a small
Fine.
sentence as well, I know.
Yeah.
And you've got this 13-year-old girl that has had this profound, you know, awful thing happen to her. And then she's at the center of this kind of bizarre act and this bizarre kind of paranormal, we'll use the word paranormal, events. And also it's interesting that in the newspaper, in this separate account of her very tragic assault, the mother of the boy who did it swore adamant he didn't. And they actually refer to it in the newspaper as that the mother cursed her. So you've got all this kind of very, very paranormal discussions going on. You've got discussions of cursing and, you know, almost witchcraft in a way. And at the center of it, you've got this young girl. And it does culminate in her being taken off her parents and the doctors taking her to observe her. And while she was at the doctor's, nothing really happened. So there isn't really any evidence. She is swearing blind that it is happening, but because she was in a house of a man of science and he wasn't able to observe anything, they start to question it. And it's a little bit later. So this is all taking place in November 1883. And by the time we get to kind of late, so after the 17th, 18th, 19th to the 20th, we start to see more doubts coming in the newspaper reports. And it culminates in her confessing. Now I'm doing air quotations because, as I've said at the beginning, when as I've researched this a little bit more, there's an element to it that makes me consider, is this a hoax? It's certainly put forward as a hoax in the newspaper articles, but then previously they put it forward as genuine paranormal activity. So I don't know, but it said that some special correspondents met with her, and they said after a little trouble, they've discovered the girl Davis in the company of a friend, and they interrogated her. And she pretended to cry a while, and the doctor requested her to go through some of the tricks. That's when she confessed to the doctor that the truth, that it was the truth, that she'd completely made up the whole thing, and she was basically lying, and that she caused the whole countryside to gape open-mouthed ever since November the 1st, and that the mysterious spirits have nothing to do with the business. And it describes her as being hysterical at first, but she soon showed them how she could make a chair jump and a bucket, and it was all a sleight of hand, and that there was nothing supernatural about the actual event. And some newspapers are absolutely horrible about her. And I don't really want to share some of the things that they do
Oh, I
say
don't think,
about her, because
yeah.
it's They're just horrible about the girl, and you've got to remember the human aspect of it as well. But some of them actually say that she does deserve pity, and that she didn't
He does, yeah.
intend for it to become as big as it actually did. There's some reference to a wagoner in the local community teaching her some tricks he knew, and she then was replicating them, and it all got out of hand. But there's one newspaper article on the British newspaper archives from the actual Shrewsbury newspaper that says that this case does not admit an easy explanation
Yeah.
because the girl seemed very much frightened. So you would think that would be the end of it. You'd think that actually this is the end. She's admitted to it being a hoax. She was showing off some tricks that someone had shown her, and it all got out of hand. But the community still tends to believe that it was real.
Yeah.
Her family, her mother and father, were still very, very much in the mind that it was real. And even the family, the Hampsons that she was working for, believed it was real. And then we get, a few days after her confession, an article called Kissing the Shropshire Fraud. And it says the girl Emma Davis of Weston Lullinfield has been said to have been interviewed by local reporters. To them, she's emphatically declared that the tricks she confessed to was forced upon her by the London reporters. She states that one of the two who waited upon her to act at Dr. Cork's represented himself to be a policeman and threatened to take her to prison if she did not confess it was a trick. They also slapped her hands upon leaving and tried to kiss her. The manifestations have continued by Friday, and the girl was adamant that they have continued, and she was taken to London by a man and a woman who promised to do right by her. And this throws in a whole different discussion because,
It makes more sense, yeah.
yeah, you've got this idea that actually this hoax, where this girl has been lambasted in the newspapers for making up paranormal activity, and she might very well have done, but she's now saying to local reporters, who she probably feels a little bit more comfortable with, actually, these men have lied to me, and they said that they were police officers and that I'd go to prison if I didn't confess. So I've lied, and the actual lie is the confession, but this is still going on, and this
Yeah.
event is still going on. And there was a lot of offers in the aftermath of it of adoption, from managers of music halls and kind of a vaudeville acts and things like that, because if she was such a good sleight of hand and so good at the tricks, they wanted to kind of take her into show business.
Yeah.
But the pressure of the events, and I think the way that the newspapers dealt with it, I think that's why she ended up being taken to London for some respite from not only, if it is true, the paranormal events, but also from the limelight, because it's reported in the newspapers that thousands of people went to this relatively small village in Shropshire to try and witness it for themselves. And really, you've got the hysteria and the craze about this paranormal activity not coming from her community, but from the country. And as I said, I feel very strongly for Emma, and through my research, I wasn't expecting it to have the twist it did. I thought, because I'd heard of her story previously, it was as clean cut as that she was, a servant girl who made up some stories and then confessed. But you've got all these different layers, and it could quite easily be that, she has had this incredibly traumatic experience, and her way of dealing with it, or her way of trying to reclaim a little bit of herself, or is to make up this lie that then gets out of hand. Or equally, it could have been genuine paranormal activity, because at the end of the day, what is genuine paranormal activity? How do we know and discern one case from another?
Yeah.
And we know that, historically and sadly, more recently, journalists have taken to incredibly difficult practices and negative practices to try and get information out of people. So, consequently, why couldn't this have happened with Emma? And I do think the verdict's out for her. And it's the last thing I've been able to find is about a month after it all kicked off, because it was all very, prevalent in the newspapers, very, you know, every newspaper I could find reported all over, and it was sensationalized. And then one of the last things I've been able to find is that her parents were still attributing it to the supernatural. So I think the verdict's out. I'd love to potentially hear what you reckon about it, but I don't know. I think I wanted to believe it was a hoax, but when I gained more context about Emma and Emma's situation, and particularly this confession that was forced out of her, I'm left kind of considering maybe it is paranormal.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think to me it's more preternatural than supernatural, I think,
Yeah.
definitely. I think this is a product of or a reaction of somebody who's been grossly mistreated. I think
Yeah, yeah.
to be incredibly cynical, perhaps her parents benefit from the prevailing idea of it being supernatural and the
Yeah.
interest in the case and the daughter and the pecuniary things that might follow that. I don't know, I could be wrong, and you know, some might listen and say, no, they were, you know, really good people. And I would instantly, on hearing a story like this, look at the childhood, look at the home life, things like this, a bit like is it Janet, you know, the Pendle witch trials, the little girl that was put in
Yes,
the,
yeah.
it's reminiscent of that. A different scenario, but this idea of all eyes on her, you know, and maybe, you know, if you're looking in a paper, first of all, why are they describing a 13-year-old's appearance? And also to
Yeah.
call her plain but childlike in appearance, as you say, she's a child. But I think this already sexualizing of her, she's bland, she's plain, you know, these things. There is, when you started turning quite early, so I thought this, it kind of screams sexual abuse. I think that was, there was
Yeah,
that thing.
yeah.
And I think, to me, as I say, I think it's what's going on is preternatural, but I don't think it's supernatural. I think
Yeah.
reactionary to abuse, which I'm, you know, perhaps rather tragically wasn't just from this man. And let's just say he's getting off rather lightly, because I find the dynamic interesting that she's vilified, but also his mother is said to have set a curse and things like this. Why this fixation on what the women are doing? Why not hold
Yeah.
that twat up for what he's done?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think the parents, I don't know how much we know about that, but I would be inclined to be interested to look into the home life and think that things are maybe not as appears, because for a little girl, because that's what she was, you know, in that other house, and these things that are going on, these are, I think, cries for help,
Yeah,
in the form of a
I can
television.
see that,
Rather,
definitely.
yeah. Do I think that it's supernatural that something has kind of pinned itself to her and is as it is not her fault? I don't. I think, as with things like the Batty podcast, I think a lot of the time it's girls at a complex age that have been through things. And I don't say that with brevity or trying to, you know, any kind of nonchalance. I say that just in, you know, circumstances differ, but it's such a challenging age, particularly if someone has
Yeah.
cruelty or any form of neglect, abuse, whatever may be contributing factors. I would think it's the complexities of her life and how she's been
Yeah.
treated, rather than thinking that was a ghost. But as you say, what is sort of, you know, supernatural? Because these are all things that are not natural. So
Yeah.
yes, I would be very inclined to think it's the mistreatment of a child that continues
Yeah.
and then becomes the, you know, using her flagrantly, basically, in the paper and things like this, and this sort of really rather heinous idea of the musicals and things, having done an episode on that, I know, but you know, for their gains. I think this is a little
Exploitative, isn't
girl
it?
exploited. That's exactly the word. That's the word. Thank you. And I think this is somebody who has been used from cradle to grave, I think, by the sounds of it, sadly. And I think that is what this is the result of. I don't think it's a hoax that's gone wrong or has been extended in a knowing way. I think the papers probably did say, you know, I think there's some things she was doing, and the papers kind of like, I reckon they saw what was going on, just as they do today when you get, you know, troubled reality TV stars and things like this. And they're like, do you know what? Do this, get this person to say that, you know, Big Brother, things like that. They play to people's frailties and insecurities and things that have happened to them, and put them in situations where those things are exacerbated. And
Yeah.
Victorian Freak Show never went away, because that's what they're doing to people for headlines, for TV, whatever. And this girl pulled a crowd, but I don't, the blame is not with her. Like,
No, I
she
think
pulled
I
a
agree
Clive
there.
like a showpiece. I think she was maneuvered, and even if there were some, it was her own doing in terms of her own decisions. But based on what? Based on, you know, she's not making sound decisions because look how she's being treated. You know,
Yeah.
so she is the victim, not the villain. And I think she's not perpetrating anything, because I think what she's doing, she's not fully culpable of.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my thought. Anyway,
No, I
I
think
know it's
that's
not exciting and
no,
got
but I can
into it, yeah.
see completely where you're coming, because that's my other, so that's my flip side of the coin that you've described so eloquently. And I think when we look at Emma Davis so often, the blame is put on her. It's like she's done this, she's done that, she's, you know, a wicked girl and all this. And
Way. And
all,
do you know what?
yeah.
Actually, I've got to say, just interrupting myself, the wickedness, things like this are perversities, I
Yeah.
think. She's at an age where that sort of thing starts to happen. Same with the girl with the Battersea Poltergeist. And they start to describe in a way that you're like, this is on the fringe of sexual, which makes it deeply sexual and perverse, and very troubled. And that's what they start doing, to discuss their appearance and their age and things in the way that they do. Like, these are perversities, grotesque perversities,
Yeah.
that's going on. And whilst they're looking and blaming her and this scolding and rebuking this girl in this kind of domineering, perverse way, it's obscene. It's
Yeah.
gross. It's gross.
Yeah. And I feel very deeply for Emma, and I do. I've not been able to. I'm in the process of trying to track her down after this, and I really want to find out a little bit more about her. So I am gonna keep looking, but I really do hope that she was able to find something after this event and that she was able to find happiness, because
I
it's
don't anticipate
clear.
a happy ending, I'm afraid. I know that
No,
doesn't fit the
I
idea.
don't either.
Which there
But
was, but I don't anticipate it. Yeah.
it's a very unhappy event, and the newspapers, I think, are the ones to fully, because don't get me wrong, you get some that report it very respectfully, and you get some that, you know, there was one that was saying that completely conflating what was actually happening and saying actually there were singing pigs. And, you know, there was one event where she walked outside and the pigs stood up and sung the national anthem and then mocking her.
Yeah,
And
just pricks, you know, you think,
yeah,
well,
it is. It's just pricks. And I think
yeah.
that this is why hoax are so interesting. Hoaxes, because there are some that are clean cut hoaxes. There are some that are a little bit more nuanced, like the Bristol case, where we don't know. They could have seen something, or they could have believed themselves to have seen something. And
Yeah.
then there are situations like this that, you know, I can't help but keep referencing the Battersea Poltergeist, because I can see so many kind of mirrors with the way that she's treated, and other poltergeist cases, because they all do seem to center around very young teenage girls or adolescent girls. And
Well, look at The Exorcist, the film. Yeah.
And I think we can learn so much about a community. We can learn so much about the way people treat people as well, the way people that treat people who are different, the way people that treat people who are struggling, or, you know, all these different things. We can learn about human decency, but also times where there's a lack of human decency. And I think, if anything, that's what Emma symbolizes. Emma, through her 13 years, sadly, didn't see that decency, didn't see the way she should have been treated. And it's fascinating to then look at that in the paranormal context of, could this actually have happened? But equally look at it as a symptom of her own treatment. And I think that's why these kind of stories need to be discussed and not just left as this was this or this was this. There's no black and white with the paranormal. I think there's innumerable shades of grey, and Emma's an example of that.
I agree. I think that the other tragedy of it is that she's better known for a would-be hoax or not than being recognized. How she was treated, you know, the
Yeah.
hypersexualization of children, things like this. And I know, look, maybe that doesn't make a clickbait type of story, but to me, this idea of the, you know, the press just as they do today to adults, to teenagers, things, you know, when people clearly have problems, whether it's, you know, excessive plastic surgery, things like this, you know, that obviously something bigger is going on. And they're like, look at this girl's nose, look at this, look at tripe pout and all this other stuff. And you wouldn't recognize them and all these shitty things that you think, what is it that we're contributing to here?
Yeah.
What is it we're doing? And we utilize people while they're fun to poke at and look at and then discard them when they're not. And as I say, reality TV is absolutely the case in point. And then what comes of those people once they cease to be useful? They become even, you know, maybe they embrace even being a figure of ridicule because it's better than being in total obscurity. But I think it's very tragic. I don't think it's a ghost story so much as just a very sad story.
Yeah. And I think that's what needs to be highlighted as well, is that this one in particular, it's a very sad story in that she was a person. And I think
she was a little girl.
Yeah. Even ghost stories that we hold a bit more credence in the sense that people still believe in them, they're people at the center of them. And once we start to take away the person, I think we're on a slippery slope. And I think that's the case with so much with history, when we start to forget that these figures in history are people and that they were people. And the human aspect of these stories, when we lose that, we lose an aspect of, I think, us and ourselves. We lose an aspect of our own humanity. And, you know, I wish that I could just, you know, reach back through the centuries and, you know, do something with Emma. Or say something that could, you know, nothing could make it better. But I think when you lose the humanity from a story, it might as well not be told. And I think that's what's so good about having this platform and being able to discuss these kind of things, is that we focus on the human side of the history and we share the human side of it, and that we're not, you know, we're not ashamed to go, this is a person, hold, you know, have that respect. So it makes me really grateful that we can have these conversations.
Yeah, I agree. And with the frankness, and you're like, you know, hi guys, on that high note. But I mean, it's still, you know, because there are things to laugh about, like hooting owls, and there are things that are deeply, deeply tragic. And sadly, I think that is the kind of the nuance of life, isn't it? That, you know, you hear stories, think, oh, bloody hell, I wish I hadn't heard that. And I don't wish I hadn't heard this. I think it's a fascinating story and it's a fascinating one-to-one pick. I think there's things in life that are very sad and problematic. And
yeah.
They are, you know, there are other things that are sort of, like I say, are hooting owls that are funny. But I think it's been really fascinating. And as an episode, I think it's, yeah, because I didn't know which sort of turn it would take, because this is, again, like, this is more your area, like, that you know a lot about. And I find it really interesting. And I think, you know, look, whether you're in Shropshire, whether you're in Hampshire, whatever, you know, every parish, every county is going to have stories that are similar and some...
Yeah.
Much more famous than others. But it's interesting, as you say, this idea of how these stories prevail. And eventually what happens, of course, is that that person ceases to be a person. They become a story and they become then folkloric because of their story. And, you know, rightly or wrongly, or whether they're vilified or celebrated, it's interesting. I think often there are situations where young girls like this are vilified, and yet you get men breaking out of prisons and things like this and doing much worse things, and they're like, hooray, isn't he a character? I bet he's dashing and gorgeous too.
What a cat.
Like, yeah, they're like, but don't look over that 13-year-old, she's bland and she's
how dare she exist.
She's wicked. And you're like, all right, mate, rein that one in. You know, but look, that's another episode to
it. Yeah, like, and I think,
you know, mystery.
What's so interesting is all of these stories are so different, but they're all considered hoaxes.
Exactly.
And it's the idea that you can have this term, and when you think of a hoax, you tend to think of something malicious or something that's purposeful.
Yeah.
But all of these stories are considered by the media at the time, or the media even now, to be examples of hoax, paranormal, hoax, supernatural stories. And it just shows you, and I think that in a way is a comment on the human experience and kind of how nothing is as black and white, nothing is as clear cut as this is right, this is wrong. They're all hoaxes, but they're all different. And just like the human experience can be innumerably different when we look at the same things. And I think everyone, regardless of, you know, whether they're team believer or team skeptic, everyone experiences the paranormal in a different way. Everyone has a pull to the paranormal in a different way. Some people are pulled to the paranormal through Most Haunted and kind of 90s, early 2000s paranormal TV, The Sixth Sense with Colin Fry. Other people, it's Victorian ghost stories and the idea of the literary ghost.
Yeah.
Other people, it's purely folkloric ones, or some people are all of the above. And I think we're all drawn to these stories in different ways. And these stories can all symbolize different things. They all allow us an insight into a past that is otherwise unattainable for us.
Yeah.
These aren't the narratives that are in your traditional history books or your historiography. This is a window into working class lives, working class struggles. And, you know, it's fascinating. And I think that's why when I have dedicated so much time to looking at the paranormal and exploring it is not through an idea, a desire to find out whether there's ghosts. I think, you know, I think we'd all like to know, but
no, you can't, we can't, can we? You can never.
No, we can't, but it's that window into a community that is otherwise unattainable for us, and to look at the past with empathy and to look at the past and consider its ratifications on the future and on us in the present. So I am a wholehearted, you know, supporter of the ghost story in its all its forms. And I think even the ghost hoax has, or the supernatural hoax has a place in narratives of the paranormal.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think in a world which absolutely, you know, we seek logic and pattern and things like this. And despite, you know, it's interesting that in fact the escapism from the chaos and that sort of thing, the real life, is often a ghost story or a program about ghosts or a podcast or a film, whatever it may be. It is the golden goose, that word. If you say ghost, they're like, getting that.
Perhaps the Shropshire Witches podcast.
Exactly. If you got taste, if you're a connoisseur of folklore. Look, everybody, as I say, it's an every man's thing. Some people like the ghosts of royals, whatever it may be. Someone else, like, yeah, I think it's something that it'll stand the test of time. People will be fascinated with it. Have we got any parting quick thoughts? This is a long episode, guys. I'm sorry about this, but also hope you've enjoyed it. But have we got anything we want to add before we depart into the ether and go ghost hunting and all these sorts of things?
Just that I think I'd implore people, if there's been anything that's interested you by out of today's episode, hopefully there's been at least something.
I
should have phrased that better. You have been interested by this episode. To look at your own communities. If every single community will have stories like Shropshire.
Do some research.
I choose to look at Shropshire because it's my community. It's where I feel the most me. But equally, you could look at anywhere in the country or arguably in the world, and you will find folk narratives or, you know, newspaper articles of potential ghosts or, you know, that ghost false alarm. So, you know, if anything has sparked your interest or thought made you consider looking into it further, look into it, because you will find them within your own communities. And, you know, have a little look into what Shropshire's doing as well, because it's fascinating.
Agreed. Right. On that note, we'll say goodnight to you all. But thank you so much. Amy, loved it. Fascinating. Extraordinary.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Good night. Good morning. Whatever time of day you're listening to this.
Good mid-afternoon.
Good mid-afternoon, my dears. And we will see you all very, very soon. Thank you for all your support. It's fantastic, overwhelming, brilliant. So we'll see you all on the other side. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.